the creaky chair. Can you hear that? One of these days I should do something about that. I should do a lot of things. Greetings, how y'all been? I haven't podcasted in, 2 weeks or some shit? But it's summer. Trail running has been good. Girls are wearing short skirts. I've been busy with stuff. Oh, you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, and moan. Dig in your heels and hold on tight. You can shove your opinion up your ass, that way Obama's cock has something to keep it company. Either you are wrong or I am right. Don't forget, the ever-present, most likely third possibility, you are wrong and I am right. That's how it goes down. Just barrels on out there and rolls over all of you fucking statists. And why does that happen? It happens because I'm right. I'm always right. I've always been right. I will always be right. I'm never wrong. I'm the great one himself, founder of Cynical Libertarian Society. This is Stating the Obvious Podcast. It is the one time for which I launch the cruise missile of my intellect. Cruise missile that is tipped with a nuclear warhead and has a stupidity-seeking guidance system. Automatically homes in on the stupidest statist within its range. Homes in on the stupidest statist and just blows you to shit. It doesn't matter what kind of safe space you're in. It doesn't matter how many trigger warnings you've received. It doesn't matter how many times you talk about democracy. It does not fucking matter. The statist seeking nuclear tipped cruise missile of my intellect functions on one principle and one principle only: natural selection. When you remove the state, the inferior people will almost instantly die because they will not be capable of providing for themselves. And then you will have only superior people left, and then you can have an anarcho-capitalist society. Till then, however, we will continue to keep all the welfare recipients alive, whether they be, black women in the ghetto with 7 babies by 5 different baby daddies, or whether they be Wells Fargo in the military-industrial complex. All of the welfare recipients will continue to thrive as long as you dumb cocksuckers keep voting for other dumb cocksuckers, because you need somebody to make your decisions for you because you are inferior. Talking about voting, very briefly, because we're going to move on and talk about a book today, I did some research, which, of course, I should say I did some millennial research. Oh, I need to write that. That would be great. In the lexicon, which I need to work on. I have so much. Every time I come on here, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do I got so much to do. And I still always have so much to do, I swear to God. Oh, it never ends. The ideas come faster than... There's only 24 hours in a day. It sucks ass. Millennial research. That should be in the lexicon. Millennial research is when you type something into Google and automatically believe the very first thing that comes up. That's called millennial research. I did some millennial research to see how things are going with the Trumpening. And so here, according to Google, it must be true. It's Google. It's got to be true. If you think this is not true, then obviously you hate black people. Presidential primaries, Republican. Donald Trump has 1,068 delegate votes, or whatever the fuck they're called. Cruz has 564, and apparently, according to Google, so it must be true, there are 1,237 delegate votes needed to win the nominee, and there are 505 still available. So according to Google, so thus it must be true, it is actually impossible for Cruz to be the nominee. Now, of course, we know that that's not necessarily true. They changed the rules to keep Ron Paul out when Hillary and Obama were in the thing, of course, as I've talked about, and as you can find out by doing a thing called millennial research, typing shit into Google. Hillary Clinton got more votes than Obama did in the primaries, or whatever they're called, delegate that I don't know the words for these things because I don't give a shit. It's all statism to me. But Hillary got more votes, but Obama was actually the nominee because, of course, he was black, and the Democrats knew that black trumps female. Meanwhile, over here on the Democrat side, according to Google, so therefore it must be true, the Democrats' delegate results for Hillary, she has 2,228. Bernie Sanders has 1,454. And one of them needs 2,383 for the nomination, and there are still 1,000 available. So at this point, conceivably, either of them could still be the delegate. We know that it will be Hillary, because as I have said, and as we are seeing, Bernie Sanders is getting the same treatment that Ron Paul got. There's no way the Democrats are going to let Bernie Sanders be the nominee. It is Hillary Clinton's time. Hillary Clinton has a vagina. Hillary Clinton, who will be the next president of the United States, regardless of whether it's Trump, Cruz, it doesn't matter. Hillary Clinton has already won the election, because she will best serve the needs of the military-industrial complex. And she will best allow the state to continue doing what it's doing without criticism. As I've talked about before, I say very briefly, I am generally in favor of Republican presidents, because when there is a Republican president, the media actually points to things the government is doing. Right? If Donald Trump or George Bush were president while all of these people around the planet were being killed in drone strikes, the media would be going insane. But because Obama is a Democrat and because he's black, he can have people killed with flying robots and very often kill the wrong people and have all sorts of collateral damage. And the media says absolutely nothing. And that's why Hillary Clinton is going to be the next president, because under Hillary Clinton, the drone strikes can continue, the media will say nothing. The corporate bailouts can continue, the media will say nothing. All of this stuff will continue and the media will say nothing. If Donald Trump is elected, suddenly the media will start noticing everything the government does and start pointing it out. And this is not what is going to serve the interest of the NSA. I mean, again, the spying on the American people. Can you imagine the NSA, the Snowden documents, being released under Trump or Bush? Can you imagine how insane the media would have gone and taken that? But because they were released when a black man was president, it was just swept under the rugs, and anybody who said anything about the Snowden documents was just instantly labeled as a wacko, a conspiracy theorist, somebody who supports the terrorists, somebody who hates children, somebody who hates minorities, as being Islamophobic, and all this other horseshit. Donald Trump, however, will not win, because he will not serve the interest of the military-industrial complex, the corporations, and the welfare recipients the way that Hillary Clinton will. So prepare yourself for 8 years of another Clinton. I am the Great One himself. I am the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society on the internet since 1999, podcasting for 11 years. This November, it'll be 12 years, 12-year anniversary coming up. I have a cup of coffee in my hand right now. Oh, today is 9th of May, 2016. In the control room right over there is the lovely and adorable Randy. Let me close the web browser because I don't need to look at Google's fucking voting results anymore. Now, speaking of the Snowden documents, originally I was not intending to discuss this book on the podcast, but I started reading it and there's some stuff in here I decided, all right, you know what, I do want to read this, I do want to talk about it. This book is called Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Collect Your Data and Control Your World, is by Bruce Schneider. The whole technology thing is something I think people still don't get. And he, Bruce Schneider, who wrote this book, gets that people don't get it. And it always fascinates me when I have to deal with some idiot who thinks that the internet makes some idiot who thinks the internet equals more freedom. That's sort of what I'm looking for. I was trying to think, how do I distill this? I was doing a thing called thinking. Notice how my mouth wasn't constantly moving like a statist. That's because my brain was engaging. And I'm still waking up. I went for a short, very short run this morning, just to get the blood flowing. But the podcast is already quote-unquote late. So we're recording this, and it's already after 10 o'clock in the morning. Normally, the podcast would already be out by now. But I'm just coming off of my tail end of being really busy. Anyhow, stupid people think that the internet gives them more freedom. And when someone says something like this to you, that is an indicator you're dealing with a stupid person. The internet does not give you more freedom. The internet makes it easier for governments to restrict your freedom. Because, and Bruce, in his book, Data and Goliath, talks about this very thing quite a bit. If you and I are wherever, we're sitting at my house, we're sitting at your house, we're driving around in your car, we're at the park, we're in the grocery store, whatever, and we're talking, and we're saying things, there are ways for these conversations to be monitored, but it's a little bit harder, right? You need microphones there. So if you just go someplace where you know there's not a microphone, you can have conversations and not be recorded. But everything you say, not just the words you type, every click of your mouse, every website you go to, how long you're there, every single thing you do on the internet is recorded. And we know the NSA is gathering all of this data. And thanks to the ability of computers to search through this data, to automate the search through the data, it means that everything you do can ultimately be monitored. And everything you do is ultimately something you can be punished for. In East Germany, when they had the Stasi, and everybody was spying on everybody, and everybody was reading each other, the Stasi was reading everybody's mail and every this other shit. I watched a good movie a while back about that. I know I talked about it on the podcast. I can't remember the name of it. Shit. Wish I could. It's a really fucking good movie. But before computers, automation, algorithms existed, if you wanted to read somebody's mail, you had to intercept the envelopes, open the envelopes up, have a person sit there and read the mail. Now, of course, you simply tap your NSA computer into the internet, you grab every piece of email that comes through whatever particular pipeline you're on, and you scan it for any words that you don't like. And in the blink of an eye, you're reading the mail of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. And the idea that this is somehow more freedom is an idea that can only be contained in the brain of a stupid person, otherwise known as a statist. Otherwise known as a welfare recipient, otherwise known as an inferior person, otherwise known as somebody who, in an anarcho-capitalist society, would most likely be dead. Okay, let's get to the book. Enough of my meandering. So, give me a moment while I practice bad speech patterns and say the word so unnecessarily. and refill the coffee cup and make noises in the background. Prince is still dead, by the way. Listened to... Stefan Molyneux did a video about Prince, and I finally watched that last night. It was interesting. I learned a bunch of stuff about Prince I did not know. I have to say that I have a little bit more respect for the guy now than I did before. I liked his music before. I thought he was a very good musician. What I found the most interesting was that Molyneux was talking about, you know, other people had reported that Prince had this tremendous stage fright, which is kind of, well, I mean, it's not, and this is the thing, it's one of these things I've talked about before. I do theater, and people always assume that if somebody is an actor, that they would also be good at public speaking, giving a speech. And that's not true. I know many actors who are terrified of giving speeches. They can go on a stage and perform, but if they have to give a speech, it's not going to happen. And so just finding out that Prince, of all people, had stage fright, not just small amounts of stage fright, but apparently, you know, it's on the internet, it must be true, according to Stefan Molyneux's sources, the things he quoted, like overpowering stage fright to the point where that he needed drugs to go on stage. It's like, wow, really? I mean, a man that musically talented, just to think, how could he have stage fright? I mean, come on, man, you're Prince. Just go the fuck out there and play the guitar. You're going to be fine. But these are the contradictions of being human beings. We have great talents. We also have great fears. My great talent is making fun of statists. My great fear is that they're not all going to die in my lifetime so that I can experience and capitalize. All right, let's get started. Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Collect Your Data and Control Your World by Bruce Schneider. Quick overview of the book. He covers a lot of territory. He doesn't go in depth on a lot of things. And I just remembered, I still haven't read the very last, like, three pages of the book. I need to finish that off. The book has over 100 pages of footnotes for the sources for what's in it. So the actual reading part is 230 pages, and there's 100 pages of footnotes. So the guy has actually done this thing called research, and I don't mean millennial research by typing shit into Google and believing the first thing that comes up. I mean, he's done actual real research. He covers a lot of territory, and he mostly sort of skims. He doesn't go really in-depth into things. So this is a great overview. This is the kind of book that you can give to somebody who thinks that the internet makes them more free and thinks that, you know, the NSA is really a-okay because Obama's the president and he's black, and if you oppose the NSA listening to phone conversations, then obviously you hate black people and you also hate Muslims and you're racist, sexist, homophobic. This is a good book that serves as an introduction to all the potential abuses of your electronic data, not only by the NSA, also by the corporations. All right, we're on page 39. Four examples of the NSA. Here are four examples of how the NSA uses cell phone data. Number one, the NSA uses cell phone location information to track people whose movements intersect. For example, this is also a good book for those who don't realize, because when you say things to people like, well, you know, people can track where you are with your cell phone. I love the people who think that's not true. It's just so baffling to me that it's the year 2016 and people are so fucking stupid that they think tracking a cell phone is something that doesn't really happen, that it can't really happen. I mean, do you people know nothing about technology? Do you not understand how technology works? And of course they don't, because they've been sheltered from everything for their entire lives because they're statist. They are inferior. Natural selection says they would be dead, but the government keeps them alive and keeps them breeding because the government and the corporations and the media want more stupid people and fewer smart people. This is a good book, because when you've got these people in your life and they think, well, no, you can't track people with their cell phone. That's a conspiracy theory, man. That's something that Donald Trump supporters say. That's not real, man. You hate black people. This is a book that they can read and perhaps learn something. Remember, you can't fix a statist. Statists are born, they're born stupid, there's something in their brain chemistry that makes them inferior to the anarcho-capitalist. They can't be fixed. But this is a book that might help a person who is an anarcho-capitalist and doesn't know it, might help them emerge. And let me also throw out normal, I say this about almost every book I ever read because it's just true. The author in this book is not an anarcho-capitalist. His solutions to all the problems are, you guessed it, more government. See, his solutions to all the problems, which he very correctly identifies, is, well, we should just have more laws. Because, yes, of course, laws work so effectively well at controlling the government, right? The government has never done anything that's against the law. Neither, of course, has the NSA, the corporations, the military-industrial complex. No, no, no. See, if we just have more laws, then everything will be totally a-okay. That's the solution. And of course, we anarcho-capitalists know that the solution is allowing the stupid people to die off, and that way there's only smart people left, and if there's only smart people, then there would be no state. Problem is, the state is here, it keeps the stupid people alive, there's no way to allow the stupid people to die off. Quandary. Motherfucker. Okay. Number one, the NSA uses cell phone location information to track people whose movements intersect. For example, assume that the NSA is interested in Alice. If Bob is at the same restaurant as Alice, if it's Alice's restaurant, if Bob is at the same restaurant as Alice one evening, and then at the same coffee shop as Alice a week later, and at the same airport as Alice a month later, the system will flag Bob as a potential associate of Alice's, even if the two have never communicated electronically. Number two, the NSA tracks the location of phones that are carried around by U.S. spies overseas. Then it determines whether there are any other cell phones that follow the agent's phones around. Basically, the NSA checks whether anyone is tailing those agents. Number three, the NSA has a program where it trawls through cell phone metadata to spot phones that are turned on, used for a while, and then turned off and never used again. And it uses the phone's usage patterns to chain them together. This technique is employed to find burner phones used by people who wish to avoid detection. And of course, the statist will say, well, but people who have burner phones are obviously criminals, and so that's completely okay. Right, because if you don't want to be tracked, you must obviously be a criminal. Remember, if you have nothing to fear, you have nothing to hide. Which is interesting, because when you say to people who will say that, well, if you have nothing to fear, you have nothing to hide, it's like, so great, could I have your credit card numbers, your bank account number? Well, no. It was like, well, why? What are you afraid of? You have nothing to hide, right? And this is something he explores in depth in the book, as people say that, oh, well, you have nothing to hide. Well, no, you do have things to hide. He points out all sorts of examples of how it has nothing to do with hiding. Privacy is a part of being psychologically healthy. But of course, remember, the state does not want its sheep to be psychologically healthy. The state wants people who are emotionally, psychologically crippled, because those are the people who most benefit the state. Privacy is one of the things necessary for a sound emotional foundation. Again, I've talked about this extensively. You take animals, you put them in a zoo, you confine them. They go stir crazy, partially because they're confined, but also because of the lack of privacy. If there's other animals in the cell, they can't get away from them. There's people around them all the time. There may be other animals within their vicinity. They cannot get away. And same thing with humans. Humans, we need privacy. We need places where we can go, do things without being observed, do things without being monitored, whether it's by ourselves, whether it's with our friends, whatever. I think this is one of the reasons why people enjoy going out, hiking, camping, rock climbing, whatever, getting away from society. You're getting away from people. You're getting away from the mechanization. You're getting away from the concrete. You're getting away from the structures. You're getting back to nature. You're also getting to a place where you have this sense of privacy. Number four, the NSA collects data on people who turn their cell phones off and for how long. It then collects the locations of those people when they turn their phones off and looks for others nearby who also turn their phones off for a similar period of times. In other words, it looks for secret meetings. Turning your cell phone off is actually considered a flag to the NSA. If you turn off your cell phone, you become a potential terrorist. The fact that every statist who hears me say those words will respond by saying, I'm a conspiracy theory wacko and there's nothing wrong with this, is pretty fucking terrifying. Page 42. As soon as I find page 42, it's right after page 43, probably. Before page 45. Page 42, what do I got here? For example, okay. What are these examples of? When a powerful organization is eavesdropping on significant portions of our electronic infrastructure and can correlate the various surveillance streams, it can often identify people who are trying to hide. Here are four stories that illustrate that. Again, the statist will say, why are these people trying to hide? Well, I don't know. When you have sex, why do you try to hide that? Why do you close the doors? Why do you, of course, some of you don't. Why do you hide your bank account numbers? Why do you hide your credit card numbers? Why do you hide your medical history? Why do you hide your underwear? Oh, wait, actually, your pants are drooping. You're not hiding your underwear. And this is, again, this is the terrifying thing about the statist mentality. And it's something that we, the anarcho-capitalist, this is what I'm saying when I say statists can't be converted. We will never be able to pierce into their tiny little brains the idea that people who simply don't want to be observed, monitored, and tracked every moment of their life are not criminals. This is something the statist cannot understand. It is impossible for them to understand this. Number one, Chinese military hackers who were implicated in a broad set of attacks against the U.S. government and corporations were identified because they accessed Facebook from the same network infrastructure they used to carry out their attacks. That wasn't very smart. Number two, Hector Monsignor, one of the leaders of the LulzSec hacker movement under investigation for breaking into numerous commercial networks, was identified and arrested in 2011 by the FBI. Although he usually practiced good computer security and used an anonymous relay service to protect his identity, he slipped up once. An inadvertent disclosure during a chat allowed investigators to track down a video on YouTube of his car, then to find his Facebook page. Number three, Paula Broadwell, who had an affair with CIA Director David Petraeus, Similarly, took extensive precautions to hide her identity. She never logged into her anonymous email service from her home network. Instead, she used hotel and other public networks where she emailed him. The FBI correlated registration data from several hotels, and hers was the common name. Number 4. A member of the hacker group Anonymous, called Wormer, wanted for hacking U.S. law enforcement websites, used an anonymous Twitter account, but linked to a photo of a woman's breast taken with an iPhone. The phone's embedded GPS coordinates pointed to a house in Australia. Another website that referenced Wormer also mentioned the name Hilgano Ocha, something whatever. The police got hold of Ochana's Facebook page, which included the information that he had an Australian girlfriend. Photos of the girlfriend matched the original photo that started all of this, and police arrested Wormer, aka Ochana. Think about, look at the stretches that you're doing here. You see a picture of some titties, you get some GPS location, you find that. My God, and think, I've talked about this before. Think of all the resources being wasted on the NSA doing this shit. Right? I mean, if you cocksucking fuckers out there care so much about the dying black kids in Africa because they ain't got no clean water, what if you took some of the resources you use for the NSA to spy on people and devoted that to getting clean water over to Africa? Just tossing that out. I know you don't give a shit about kids in Africa. You just want them as photo opportunities, and you actually like it that they're starving to death and dying, because that gives you a chance to say you care about them, which makes you feel good. Page 68. First full paragraph. Technology has greatly enhanced the FBI's ability to conduct surveillance without a warrant. And again, I know that you think that, well, what people who expect the police and the FBI to get warrants, they're obviously criminals. Because if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. And if you have nothing to fear, you have nothing to hide. And why should the police and the FBI, why should they need warrants? That's racist and sexist. And homophobic. And Donald Trump and KKK. Technology has greatly enhanced the FBI's ability to conduct surveillance without a warrant. For example, the FBI, and also local police, uses a tool called an IMSI catcher, which is basically a fake cell phone tower. Another good thing about this book is, again, when you tell people stuff like the NSA has fake Facebook servers where you log on and you're not on Facebook, you're on the NSA, and they install spyware on your computer. If you say things like that to people, they think you're a conspiracy theorist. This book talks about all this stuff, and it has footnotes and references to back it up. Like the fake cell phone towers. The average stupid fucking statist, the Republican statist, the Democrat statist, it doesn't fucking matter, thinks that those things are just conspiracy theories and they don't really exist. Right, because the NSA couldn't possibly make a fake cell phone tower. No, that's just so impossible. It just boggles my mind. When you tell people that the NSA, collects all of these phone calls and saves them. The NSA collects all the email and say, no, they don't. Yeah. Yes, they do. And why do you find that so hard to believe? And I understand why they do, because people want to believe. The statist, remember, the statist is afraid. Statism is based on fear. Did a 4-part podcast talking about that. The statist is afraid of everything. The statist is, emotionally and intellectually, a child. They fear everything around them because they don't understand it and they don't have the ability to cope with it, right? They fear they will starve to death and die because, number one, they don't have the social skills to get a job, create value for other people, and exchange value for food. And because, number two, they don't have the knowledge, the resources, and the capability, as far as just because they're lazy, to grow their own food. So because they can't grow their own food. They can't gather their own food. They can't hunt their own food. They cannot exchange value for food. They are afraid they will starve to death and die, which they would without the state. So everything they're doing is based in fear because they are not competent adults. They are children. As children, they look at the government as their parent. And just as when you're a child, you look at your parents, and what you see in your parents, number one, you see perfection, but number two, when you see flaws, you try to normalize this because you are completely dependent on your parents. You want to think your parents are perfect, that your parents are the way things are supposed to be. So, right, if your mom's an alcoholic and your dad beats you, in your brain, you're going to struggle, your brain is going to attempt to normalize this. And this is where the statist is with the government. When you explain to the statist that the government spies on them, their immediate reaction, as any child does when you point out a flaw in their parents, is to excuse the flaw, to normalize the flaw, to create excuses for the flaw. This is why the statist believes, well, the government might occasionally do some harm if there's a Republican president or a Democrat president, depending on which they vote for. But the government ultimately is good. The government cares about people. And when you point out to them the government putting American Indians on reservations, when you point out the forced sterilization of black people, when you point out that the government had slavery as a legal thing, when you point out Japanese people put in concentration camps, when you point out the Tuskegee experiment, you know, when you point out Operation MK Ultra, when you point out the government giving LSD to American troops, when you point out the government blowing up atomic bombs, exposing American troops to radiation, when you point out the government spraying, testing biological weapons in New York and Los Angeles, people say that didn't happen. I know it did. I was in the military, took NBC training. That's nuclear biological chemical. I have seen the test results. It did happen. I'm not saying chemtrails are real. Chemtrails are conspiracy theory, weirdo wackos. The government did, and they didn't use real biological weapons. They just used fake biological weapons. Not fake. They're using the flu. They're testing the delivery system, not the biological weapon. The shit did happen. I've seen the test. But when you point out, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. The government would never do that. Yes. Yes, they would. Stop rationalizing and explaining why your father beats you and why your mother drinks too much, and admit that your father beats you and your mother drinks too much, and then you can start to deal with it. But the statist, because the statist is a child, does not have that ability. Basically, a fake cell phone tower. If you've heard about it, you've heard the code name Stingray, which is actually a particular type of IMSI catcher sold by Harris Corporation. By putting up the tower, it tricks nearby cell phones into connecting with it. Once this happens, IMSI catchers can collect identification and location information of the phones, and in some cases, eavesdrop on phone conversations, text messages, and web browsing. The FBI is so scared of explaining this capability in public that the agency makes local police sign non-disclosure agreements before using the technique and instructs them to lie about it, and instructs them to lie about their use of it in court. Because you can get justice in the court system of the United States. When it seems possible that local police in Saratoga, Florida might release documents about Stingray cell phone interception equipment to plaintiffs in civil rights legislation against them, federal marshals seized the documents. Because remember, if you have nothing to fear, you have nothing to hide. And yet, the FBI has a lot to hide about their IMSI catchers. So therefore, using statist logic, they must have something to fear, right? I mean, if they have nothing to fear, then they would have nothing to hide. But they're hiding things. So they must be afraid. I don't know why they're afraid, because, again, you know, the FBI could round up everybody in the United States, make everybody lay down on their backs, and then FBI agents could come and squat over them and shit right in their faces. And the 99% would just lay there. You'd open your mouth and you would try to swallow all of the shit. And then when the agent was finished and was starting to stand up, you would say, "Oh, wait, Mr. FBI agent, here, let me lick your asshole clean for you. Because I am such a slave to the government, and I am so in love with the fact that you're doing things that if I did them are wrong, and you're a piece of shit, and Obama's black, and I hate white people, and let's get more Muslims in the country, and while those conservatives sure are evil, and those anarcho-capitalists are a bunch of sickos who are all pedophiles, and they just want to do drugs all the time, and I'm so in love with the government, let me lick your ass clean for you, Mr. FBI agent." I mean, that's what you people would do. You would. You sit there, no, it is. It is. You, fuck you, it is. There's nothing, the government, the FBI, the NSA, they could just walk down the street and start randomly shooting people, and every one of you out there would just rationalize it. Well, those people deserved it. Well, you know, they were doing their job. You would rational anything the government does. This is why I want the Donald Trump presidency. Because when Donald Trump is president, all of this rationalizing everything the government does that's bad, evil, disgusting, nasty, much of it, not all of it, but much of it will come to an end. But that's why Donald Trump will not be president. This is why Hillary Clinton will be president. Because it will all continue. It will only get worse. Page 83. What am I reading here? Okay. Blah, 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 blah. LavaBit was an email service that offered more security privacy than... Hold on, turning the page is complicated today. Than the large corporate email services most of us use. It was a small company, owned and operated by a programmer named Lauder Levison, L-A-D-A-R, Levison, and it was popular among the tech-savvy. It had 500,000 users, Edward Snowden amongst them. Soon after Snowden fled to Hong Kong in 2013, Levison received a national security letter demanding that the company turn over the master encryption key that protected all of LavaBit's users, and then not tell any of its customers that they could be monitored. Levison fought this order in court, and when it became clear that he had lost, he shut down his service rather than deceive and compromise his customers. The moral is clear. If you run a business, the FBI or NSA wants to turn it into a mass surveillance tool. It believes that it is entitled to do so solely on its own authority. The agency can force you to modify your system. It can do it all in secret and then force your business to keep that secret. Once it does that, you no longer control that part of your business. And again, the statist out there will say this is fine because people who own businesses are capitalist, they're evil, they're racist, they're sexist, they're homophobic. And that's... It's so entertaining to see information like this presented to a statist and to hear how they rationalize this stuff away. Again, it's the wife beating. It's wife beating. What do you... Randy, why can I not find the fucking word that I'm looking for? Battered wife syndrome. Thank you. I knew you were here for a reason. It's battered wife syndrome. You know, my husband hits me because I don't love him enough. The NSA is spying on people to protect us from the terrorist. If the NSA is doing it, it's okay because it's legal. it's battered wife syndrome. And to hear the inferior people make the excuses for this sort of shit. He also talks, Bruce talks in this book about the government forcing technology corporations to put back doors in their hardware and software so that the government can go in and intercept things and all this other stuff. Again, that, well, it's a conspiracy theory. No, it's not. It's not a conspiracy theory, Junior. You're just really fucking stupid and emotionally immature and inferior. Once it does that, you no longer control that part of your business. If you're a large company, you can't shut it down. You can't realistically terminate part of your service. In a very real sense, it is not your business anymore. It has become an arm of the vast United States surveillance apparatus, and if your interest conflicts with the agency's, the agency wins. Your business has been commandeered. And again, the statists will say that's fine. Businesses shouldn't be owned by private individuals anyhow. Businesses should be owned and regulated by the government, and everything is here to serve the government. And this is how you can also understand and witness a large part of the statist mentality. From the perspective of the statist, nothing should exist that is outside the reach and the control of the government. The government is, to them, everything. The reason we know this story is that Levison ran his own company. He had no corporate masters. He had no shareholders. He was able to destroy his own business for moral reasons. Larger, more beholden companies would never do that. We must assume that every other computer company that received a similar demand has eventually complied. For example, we know that the U.S. government convinced Skype through bribery, coercion, threat, or legal compulsion to make changes in how the program operates to facilitate eavesdropping. It's a dead, and this is why the Great One himself does not use Skype. We don't know what the changes were, whether they happened before or after Microsoft bought Skype in 2011, or how they satisfied whatever the government demanded, but we know they happened. And again, the statist was, that's a conspiracy theory. You just hate black people. And you know, and this is also why you don't waste your time arguing with a statist. You can't argue with that. When a statist says, no, Skype has not been compromised for the benefit of the government to spy on people, you just hate black people. You can't argue it. It's like if I say, well, Shazbot, boom, bing, bong, doom, bing, sing, sing, sing. Now, I want you to argue with that statement. I want you to convince me that part of that statement is incorrect. Right, you can't, because it makes no fucking sense. And it's the same thing. Say any of this stuff. Tell a statist about fake cell phone towers and listen to their response. And listen for something in their response that you could actually argue with. It won't be there. There's nothing in the statist response that you can work with. And this is why I say perpetually that you cannot fix a statist, you can't convert a statist, you can't convince a statist. Their brains are not capable of logic. Their brains do not have the brain chemistry that allows them to seek consistency, to make connections. In 2008, the U.S. government secretly threatened Yahoo with a $250,000 per day fine, with the daily amount increasing rapidly if it didn't join the NSA's PRISM program and provide it with user data. And in 2004, the NSA paid RSA Security to make a backdoored random number generator a default in its crypto library. But of course, remember, the government's doing all of this for your own good. Because you see, the government cares about you. The government's just trying to protect you from the terrorist. He talks about this in the book, about how all of this government surveillance has never yet resulted in preventing a terrorist plot. And he talks about this whole connect the dots thing, because every time there's a terrorist plot, you see it on the news. Well, we knew this, and we knew this, and we knew this, and we knew this, and somebody should have connected the dots, and then we would have known, and then we could have prevented this. And as he points out, yes, when you look at an incident, whatever the incident is, in hindsight, you can always find dots to connect, right? If I go and decide I'm going to make some hot tea, and then I decide on mint tea. You could then, after I've decided to make hot tea and to make mint hot tea, as opposed to making coffee or as opposed to having a gin and tonic or a martini, you could then look at the things I've done in the day and trace some dots back and say, look, somebody should have been able to predict that the great one was going to make mint tea. It's called armchair quarterbacking. It's called Captain Hindsighting. And it works from the perspective of hindsighting. Predicting the future. And I've talked about this, other people talk about it. You can predict what people are going to do in mass pretty easily. For example, I can predict that the masses of people, when Hillary Clinton becomes president of the United States in November, well, it takes over in January, when Hillary Clinton becomes president, the vast majority of people are going to ignore the drone strikes and ignore the corporate bailouts. It's easy to predict mass behavior. Predicting individual behavior is much more difficult because despite the love of algorithms and data collecting, individual human beings are chaotic creatures. We do different things all the time. We have habits, but we also have emotional responses, and we are ultimately unpredictable. We have predictable moments. We have patterns, we have routines, all this stuff, but at any moment, the human being can break out of the pattern. All right, we'll be back with part two. And looking at the notes, probably part three, knowing how I like to talk and do.